Our topic today is vinegar. It's going to be the topic we're going to be speaking, if I could use the word, more practical or more on actually what goes on in making vinegar and different issues that there potentially are, kashrus-related issues that there could be. We'll do some halachic things here and there, but we'll be, if I could use the word, lighter on the halacha and more on the practical, with just some brief ideas of here and there where halachic issues come up. So, we'll start as follows. Lots of people know that the way you make beverage alcohol or ethanol, like, you know, drinking alcohol, is you take sugar, or you take sugar that's made from starch, same idea, you hydrolyze from a starch, and you ferment it. And when you add the yeast, it ferments and becomes, the sugar becomes ethanol, which is drinking alcohol. When you do that, what you end up with something that's about 12-15% ethanol. And if you want to, you can distill that to make it a higher concentration. So the 12-15% is what we think of like a wine strength. And you could distill it further to make it high up to like a whiskey strength, or even all the way up to 95% ethanol. That's about as high as you can get. Okay, so that's the way you make alcohol, like drinking alcohol. Vinegar is a secondary fermentation, which is to say you take that alcohol that you have already, or something with alcohol in it, and you ferment it a second time, and it becomes something called the ethanol, that means the alcohol part of it becomes acetic acid, and then you dilute it to a concentration of about 5% acetic acid, and that's considered to be table vinegar, like vinegar you'd use in your house to make a salad or something like that. So that's what vinegar is. Now, when you turn sugar into ethanol, sugar into alcohol, you use a microorganism. We call it yeast. The same thing. When you turn alcohol into vinegar, that uses a microorganism, which is called Acetobacter. Now, the differences between them, the yeast and Acetobacter, I mean, aside that they're actually different things, but in the way their functionality is that yeast works fine if there's no air or oxygen in there, but Acetobacter will only function and only stay alive if there's oxygen present in where they work in. To the point that, you know, we know that the Gemara mentions in the passing, if you leave a barrel uncovered, that's what makes something turn into vinegar. The wine bottle becoming uncovered allows Acetobacter from the air, from out there, from the atmosphere to get in. It's not the oxygen, so to speak, that makes that ruins the wine. It's Acetobacter starts turning the alcohol into vinegar. And the second is that when we want to make wine, we want to ferment sugar into alcohol, you can take yeast, powder, or liquid yeast and pour it in. And that's it. It starts to work to get it going. You can get it from the atmosphere, but you can just pour some in and get it going. But if you want to turn wine into vinegar in a commercial sense, you don't want to just do it, let it just sit there and eventually, you know, sour into vinegar. You want to do it commercially. You can't just pour in some Acetobacter. It doesn't work like that. Rather, what you need to do is you need to have a mixture that has alcohol and air and get Acetobacter living in there, slowly build up the Acetobacter in there, and then keep it going. You have to keep it alive again and again, and then as you produce, you keep make sure there's lots of oxygen in there, lots of alcohol in it to keep it going, and then as some of it turns into vinegar, some of the alcohol turns into acetic acid. When it turns into vinegar, you remove some of it and add more alcohol again to keep it going. You know, you don't ever stop it. It just keeps on going and going, and as opposed to wine, whiskey, which is some kind of an ethanol product, you can make it. When you finish, you stop it, and then you add tomorrow, start again, adding more yeast. Here, you can't do that. You got to keep it alive and going and going and going for a long time. So as we go on, we'll see how these requirements that you need oxygen and that you need it to keep alive all the time are going to make a difference for how you produce it, for how you make it, how it affects the kashrus, and how it affects potentially the kashering of vinegar made in the factory. Okay, so now, there's a lot of different types of vinegar, and the difference between them, between one and the next, has to do with the source of the alcohol that was used to make the vinegar. So, for example, if you have apple cider vinegar, that's made from apple juice. The apple juice, there's a sugar in apple juice, that is fermented into making, so to speak, apple wine, so to speak. You make like an apple cider, or a fermented apple drink, or hard apple cider, you might call that nowadays. And then you ferment that hard apple cider, that alcoholic apple wine, into apple cider vinegar. Okay, so what's going on is the sugar became alcohol, and the alcohol became acetic acid, and now we have an apple cider vinegar. The same thing is for malt vinegar. That's made from something like from barley, which is malted into a beer-like beverage, and then you make it into malt vinegar. Or wine vinegar. Wine vinegar is the same thing. We take grapes, the grape juice in there has sugar in it, we turn that into grape wine, what we just call wine, and then we turn that into vinegar. Now, just as a sort of an aside, that word wine vinegar, which of course is going to be very sensitive for us, wine vinegar, which is potentially Stam Yayin, which is, it's other names for it, it's also called balsamic vinegar and sherry vinegar, there may be other versions of it, these all varieties, different types of, specific types of wine vinegar. Anyhow, so for all these kind of vinegars that I just mentioned, the taste and the color of the vinegar is very much affected by what the starting material was. I mean, apple cider vinegar has a different flavor profile than malt vinegar or than wine vinegar, depending on where it came from, because a lot of the ethanol, the acetic acid part of it is the same. It's chemically the same. Acetic acid from here is the same. But the other parts of the taste are very different, and it comes out with, depending on what you did, comes out with a different finished product. It's a different kind of vinegar. It's different kind of properties and different taste to it. Okay, now that's all those types of vinegars that I've mentioned. There's lots of them. There's rice vinegar. There's all kinds of different ones. You can make it from different items. Those are all one type of, that's a traditional type of vinegar. But there's something else called white distilled vinegar. White distilled vinegar is made from an alcohol that we call grain-neutral spirits. Grain-neutral spirits means, say, alcohol, which is grain-neutral. It means it's neutral. You can't see any indication which grain it originally came from, which is to say we stripped out all the other flavor components out of the alcohol. What does that mean? How do you do that? What that means is you make alcohol out of anything, essentially out of anything. Now, in the United States, that would mean you make it out of corn. Got lots of corn, and corn is cheap. So for us, we make it out of corn. I mean, in Europe, they might make it out of wheat. Other places, they might make it out of rice or sweet potato. But in the United States, that means you make it out of corn. And then, after you make this alcohol, and again, it would come out as 12, 13, I don't know, 15% alcohol in corn, then you distill it to the point that it becomes 95% pure. And at that point, at that level of concentration, you have such pure alcohol that there's nothing else there other than alcohol, ethanol, and a drop of water. And that's called grain-neutral spirits because it has no taste. The fact you made it from corn or from rice or from wheat or from potatoes, there's no way, or sugar for that matter, anything you made it from, you have no idea it has no carryover from that item. And it's colorless and it has essentially flavorless, aside from the alcohol flavor, the actual alcohol flavor. And when you make vinegar out of that, you'll get vinegar that has the same thing. It'll have a neutral taste to it. Okay. Now, you can't actually make vinegar out of 95% ethanol. The acetobacter won't function in that kind of an environment. So what you do is you dilute the grain-neutral spirits to about a 12% concentration. You water them down. So first you make grain-neutral spirits, then you water them down to give or take 12%, and then you can put them into a tank with acetobacter to create your vinegar. Okay, now, I mentioned all these different types of vinegars. Just about every factory that produces vinegar produces one of these types that I've mentioned, and wine vinegar. The most common is white distilled vinegar and white vinegar. Well, there might be other ones also, but wine vinegar is very, very common in vinegar companies, which is to say is that there are, now, as a rule, wine vinegar is not going to be kosher. In most companies, wine vinegar is Stam Yayin. It's made from non-kosher wine. So that is to say is just about every factory that produces vinegar is a kosher and a non-kosher factory. It's kosher for the parts that are kosher. Let's say the apple cider and the white distilled might be kosher, but almost every one of them is going to have in it wine vinegar as well. And of course, we're going to have to think about how that impacts on the kosher items that are being made in the factory. Is there any problems the fact that we have wine vinegar? How does the wine vinegars potentially transfer over into have any effect on what's going on in the in the other vinegars that are there. Okay, now let's think about the ingredients that you use to make vinegar. I already said that you need that when you make white distilled vinegar, you use grain neutral spirits and water. Okay. Aside from that, because the grain neutral spirits are just alcohol, there's just alcohol and water. That's all there is. There's no other character to it. Also, you're gonna have to add in a certain amount of what they call nutrients in it, which is to say is the acetobacter needs other things to function well in. So they add in small amounts of what they call nutrients. So the nutrients and the grain neutral spirits themselves need hashgacha. So those are the more obvious things when you're making white distilled vinegar, that those are the more obvious things that those need hashgacha. But as we go on, we will see that, to most people's surprise, the water that's in there also is also potentially connected and coming from non-kosher parts of the factory. We'll see how that happens. And therefore, it's something you have to watch also for. Which is to say, if you think about it, most people's focus when they think about vinegar factory, they think about is, hey, let's make sure that the source of the alcohol is kosher. But remember, if we start with grain neutral spirits, we take, take however many gallons of grain neutral spirits and have to dilute them from 95% strength down to 12% strength. We need a lot of water to do that dilution. And then I told you when we finish making the vinegar, when the vinegar is all ready, it has to then be watered down to a 5% strength to use for consumers, you know, if you want to bottle it for consumers. So there's a lot of water coming into this product, and to our surprise, that water might be not kosher as well. Okay, so it's something usually you don't think about the water. Water is, of course, kosher, but in this case, it might not be. Okay, now, when you make other kinds of vinegar, like apple cider or malt vinegar or wine vinegar like those don't require any nutrients added to them, typically. There's enough in the apple cider or the rice wine, there's enough in there that they don't need, that they tend to not need neutral, nutrients. But they do need water, which is to say they only need water at the end of the process. They don't need water at the beginning. The hard apple cider that comes in that's going to be turned into apple cider vinegar does not need water into it. It's at a good concentration as is, but they will need water at the end to dilute it when you want to bottle it eventually to make it at 5% strength for consumer use. Okay. Depending on the ways you make the vinegar, which we're going to talk about in a minute, the different methods of using it, there might be a need to have an antifoam if the tanks get too filled with foam. And of course, antifoam also needs hashgacha. And last, for ingredient that I could think of is that some wine vinegars have a colorant added to it. It means if the color doesn't come out the way they like it, the color could be added to it. And the color is wine-based. The color is called Eno, or Eno Cyanina. I don't know how you really pronounce it. Everybody calls it Eno. And of course, it's made from grapes, which is why it fits. It's good for color-wise, but it also makes it seem more real and natural to use a grape item in it. And of course, it's kosher sensitive, because it is made from grapes, it's made from wine. So it's also kosher sensitive as an ingredient. Okay, now let's move now to how you actually produce vinegar. What is it? What do we do? What do we do to make vinegar? So there are two ways that it's done, and the traditional way, the way it was done. The original way that was done commercially is using something called a generator. Okay, what's a generator? So it tends to be a really large tank. As an aside, I'll mention that in vinegar companies, there are lots of tanks, very large, tend to be lots of large tanks, and they all look the same, even though they're not all doing the same thing. It makes it a little confusing for a mashgiach to be able to figure out what's going on, and what's here, and what's there, what's happening. They all look the same, but they're all not doing the same thing. Anyhow, so you have these large tanks. They tend to be large wood tanks, and the main part of that chamber, really the generator, the tank, is divided into two parts. The larger part, which is on the top of the chamber, is this big, what starts off as an empty chamber, and it's filled with beechwood shavings. What is that? What are beechwood shavings? Beechwood is a kind of wood, and you take slabs of that wood and planks of that wood, and they scrape off a layer. Think about using like a plane to scrape off a layer, a very thin layer, but you scrape a long, thin layer of it, and what happens is after you scrape it off, it curls around itself. I don't know how better to describe it. It just curls around like a spring, sort of like wraps around. After you scrape it off, it's very thin, and it's flexible. It's thin enough that it could fold over, and it wraps around itself into like a snail, just wrapped all around itself. And the point is, you get these, so you know how you put thousands of shavings, of these beechwood shavings, into this upper part of the tank. So think about that. We have these thousands of pieces of wood, and each one of them has this you know, circular, round-up shape. It's not tight like a spring, but round and round like a spring. And it's filling up this chamber. So basically, what the point here there is, it's like packing, sort of, like we use in a distillation column. The point is that there's now a million surfaces inside this tank. And what they do is the alcohol is poured down from the top of the tank. If you spray alcohol onto the top of this tank, it's going to trickle through a thousand different pairs as it bangs into all these different pieces of beechwood shaving. It moves this way and that way, whichever, you know, it gets broken up and sent in a thousand different directions. And at the same time, air rises up from the bottom. So what you've got here is there's a zillion pieces of shavings, and there's a randomness to how the liquid's going to flow and the shapes. So there's a lot of contact between the air and the liquid, and then this liquid is dripping down and falling its way slowly as it makes its way down through the shavings, and then it falls into the lower part of the tank, which has no shavings, which is like a pool, and there is where it collects. And it's pumped right back up to the top of the generator to again drip through the shavings. Okay, so it goes in circular. It goes up the top, pours through the shavings. Doesn't pour through like a long flow. It drips through, and it gets lots of chances to go round and round in this back and through the generator. It takes about 2 days in a generator for the alcohol to be converted into vinegar. So it is living in there. All the acetobacter, and they're just living in there. I mean, as Mama says, it's a party. We have alcohol and air, and the acetobacter are, you know, engainated over there. And they keep on turning the alcohol, converting the alcohol into vinegar. And with time, they drain, they remove vinegar from the bottom of the tank. Excuse me. But keep adding in fresh alcohol, keep it going. Now, the truth is that even if you would drain everything out of the bottom at one point, there's loads of liquid dripping through the top. So it's not such a concern if you drain it out. Oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to our acetobacter? Because the liquid doesn't drip out in 1 second. It's not a tank you can just drain out like that. It slowly drips out. Okay? So it slowly drips down. You drain. At some point, you take out the vinegar that you've created, and you replace it with alcohol and continue the process going. Now, the reason why that it's important that you would keep them alive is because to start up a generator, I mean, to go from empty, new, brand new, and to say, let's inoculate it, let's start this up as a vinegar generator, can take months, okay? You have to get it up to the point that on an industrial scale, it's producing, turning alcohol into vinegar, you know, in a nice, continual process and doing what it's supposed to do. It that'll take weeks or months. Literally, it could take months to get it started up like that. Okay, and so that's why 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just always make sure there's alcohol and air in the tank, so we don't lose our the ability for the tank to function. Okay? Again, it's not sensitive to the point that you lose it for a minute, because if there's lots going on over there, if there's a lot of liquid and air floating around, you know, inside the shavings, but Lamites, it's got to keep going. I was in a plant that had been running for decades, literally for decades it had been running, because once they got it started, they weren't turning it off. There was no, you don't want to stop the process. Okay, now, this idea that the generator needs to run all the time and can never be turned off and never stopped impacts Hashgacha in two different ways. The good news is that because of this, it makes it pretty hard to switch a generator from one type of vinegar to another. In other words, you wouldn't be producing apple cider today and wine vinegar tomorrow. And that's because there's so much alcohol, residual alcohol, sitting in the shavings that to switch over from one type to another, you basically have to have go for quite some time of this in between that would be not this and not that. It would be like an in between kind of vinegar. It would be half rice vinegar and half apple cider, or half wine and half malt vinegar. It wouldn't be worth anything. So you take a long time to switch over as you slowly flush out all the other stuff. So it's not easy. Basically, once the tank is designated for one kind of use, this generator, it stays the way it is and doesn't change. So that's good for Hashkacha. But the bad news is that if a generator ever becomes treif, if something happens to it that somehow becomes treif, it's really hard to kasher it. Because you can't empty it. You can't empty it to start your kashering. First, you got to get rid of all the treif ingredients that are in there before you can even think about starting to kasher it. Well, getting it completely drained out, first of all, it's a physical thing. It just takes a long time to get it out because there's lots of liquid trapped in these shavings. But even if you could figure out how to get it all out, well, I don't know, maybe spray water into it and drain it all out. Even if we could do that, no company wants to do that, because after they would do that, it would take them months to get restarted. So they're putting their generator out of business for who knows how long now by doing that. So nobody really wants to do that. So it makes it very difficult to kasher. Now, just as an aside, a little halachic over here. Well, maybe we could kasher since the bli was only through kavush and it was only through stam yayin. We'll talk about it a little later, maybe next time. Is that so? You could kasher with milu v'iri. So why don't we just keep on flooding it with alcohol or vinegar and use that to do milu v'iri? Because you're allowed to do milu v'iri with liquids. There doesn't have to be water. So do milu v'iri, kasher with milu v'iri as a way of kashering it. So the reason why you can't do that is because milu v'iri could be done with any liquid, except, this is where Shachta understands Ashaf, except if the liquid is the same type of liquid that was there when it became treif. So that means that you can't use alcohol to kasher from alcohol, or vinegar to kasher from vinegar. It doesn't make a difference if it's kosher or treif, alcohol or vinegar. If it's vinegar or alcohol, you can't use it for the kashering over here. So you have to use some other liquid, and again, once you put in some other liquid here, if you don't have alcohol in the tank for any extended amount of time, you're going to have to restart the tank. Okay. Now, one more piece about the generator is that when you ferment alcohol into vinegar, that process itself creates heat, and potentially that would get so hot that it would make it that the acetobacter couldn't function well. And therefore, what happens is that as the liquid is being pumped from the bottom of the tank back up to the top to be, to circulate, it goes through a cooling heat exchanger to make sure it never gets too hot. If I understand correctly, it's not supposed to get hotter than about 90 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's way below Yetzirah display. So that makes life easier in a certain sense. We'll talk next time about covers and things like that, but from this perspective, it keeps the product always below Yetzirah display. So that was one way of making vinegar using a generator. And that's the way it had been done for maybe 100 years. Okay, but more recent decades, companies have switched over from using generators to a more modern system called an acetator. The acetator tends to be a stainless steel tank, a vertical, like a tall stainless steel tank, and it doesn't have shavings in it. Okay, the tank is just filled with a liquid, meaning alcohol that slowly turns into vinegar. Alcohol slowly turns into acetic acid. And what it has is on the bottom, it's got a distribution arm that spins around and spews out air, puts lots and lots of air into the tank, again, because the acetobacter needs air. And the acetobacter are living in the mixture of liquid and air that are in this tank. Okay, so they're just living there, not on shavings and not on drippings. It's just a tank full of liquid, and there's lots of bubbles floating up in it, and the acetobacter are just living in that mixture. And just like with a generator, you got to always make sure there's enough alcohol in there and enough air in there to keep the acetobacter going. And what they do is, as the alcohol converts into vinegar, they drain out vinegar and add in new alcohol. But over here, they switch out the alcohol, the vinegar, and put in new alcohol. And like I said before, by the generator, the liquid needs to be cooled, because if you don't cool it, it could get too hot. So there's two ways to do that. Either they pull it out and put it back in, like I said, with a heat exchanger. Some liquid comes out, goes to the heat exchanger, and comes back in. Or there's a cooling, an internal cooling coil right there in the tank itself. Remember, in the generator, you need to take the liquid out anyhow to pass it, you know, to put it back to the top for spraying back on. So that's a good way to cool it. Here, you could do that if you want to, but you can also, sometimes it's simpler just to put in the cooling coils inside. Now, there's a big difference between acetators and generators. In a certain sense, they have an exact opposite properties for our perspective of one another, and that is like this. If a person turns off an acetator, or the airflow stops even for like a minute, that could ruin the entire, kill all the acetobacter. You might lose it completely. But even so, you can restart it relatively quickly. You could either put in unpasteurized vinegar, raw vinegar that has in it live acetobacter in it, or there's another way to do it with culture that takes a little bit longer, but basically, either you can start it up instantly, or you could start it up in a couple of days, as long as you have the right starting materials, right? And therefore, in that sense, it's very different from the generator that takes forever, I mean, weeks or months to get it started up. So the properties I mentioned before here, the good news and the bad news about a generator, it's exactly the opposite, in a sense, it's exactly the opposite for an acetator. And that is as follows. Acetators are very good at switching between one product and another. Now, they might not want to, because it is a posture. There is a certain amount of changeover that has to happen to get it to go from one product to the other, but you could do it, because they're meant for restarting. It could be started up either in a day or two, or it could be started up instantly, as long as you have the right starting material to work with. So that means is, you need to be sensitive. The mashgiach has to keep his eye and say, wait a second, is this tank always used for kosher or always used for jay? Okay. It also means that if you could stop and restart it, the good news is, it makes it easier to kosher, because we can empty the tank out. First of all, there's no shavings in there, so it's easy to empty it. Empty is empty. No problem. Just drain it out, and it's empty. Wash it down. But then we can also kosher it. We can have at our leisure, we can kosher it, and then restart it again afterwards. Okay? So the bad news is, it could switch from kosher to treif, or treif to kosher more easily. But the good news is, if that ever happens, if something goes wrong, then we have a way to kosher. Okay, so now, let me talk about one more part about making vinegar for this time, and then we'll leave for next time some other last bits about how we make it, and some halachic type issues that relate to vinegar companies. Okay, the last part we're going to talk about today is concentration, and that is, after we've made our vinegar, either through a generator or an acetator, whichever one we use, the vinegar that's finished, the finished vinegar is about 12%, a 12% concentration of acetic acid. In the United States, that's referred to as 120 grains. I mean, 120 grains means 12%. Okay, that's, you know, so the grains is 10 times the percent, so to speak. In other countries, they do it a little differently. Some other countries, they do it differently. But in the United States, like in Canada, 10 grains, it means 0.6% acidity, not 1%. Okay, whatever it is, but other people do it a little differently. But in the United States, 120 grains is what you refer to the vinegar as it comes out when it's about 12% strength. For consumers, you would water it down, as I said a few times, to 5% strength, meaning 50 grains. That's how you water it down. And for industrial use, people who work in industry, they actually would like it rather than, they want stronger than 12%. They don't want 5% vinegar like you use in your house. They want 20% or 30% concentration, 200 or 300 grain vinegar, because it's easier to transport, it's easier to handle. You know, when you make your ketchup or your pickles or your, I don't know, your mustard, whatever you want to put some vinegar into it, you don't have to put in as much. You just need the concentration of acetic acid. So they want that stronger strength. Before I explain how we do that, I'm going to mention in passing, there's many know that there's a Magen Avraham in Tavnim Zayin. Excuse me, he talks about strong vinegar and weak vinegar. Not clear exactly what he's talking about, but it's possible. Strong vinegar means the vinegar as it comes out of the fermentation, when it's like 12%, and weak vinegar would be the kind of vinegar you use in your house, give or take 5%. Okay, maybe that is, maybe that's not what he means. Anyhow, so we're thinking that how do you, to dilute vinegar from 120 grains to 50 grains, I mean from 12% to 5%, that's easy, just add water. No problem, it's diluted. But how do you go from, how do you concentrate it from 12% to 20% or to 30%? So there's two ways to do it that I'm familiar with. One is a reverse osmosis. I mean, that's a fancy way of saying filtering. And that means is, The acetic acid molecules are larger than the water molecules. So what you do is you take your 120 grain vinegar, you pump it through a membrane like a filter, and the filter is such that water can pass through it and vinegar cannot. So what you do is the water passes through, and the vinegar the vinegar that stays behind is more concentrated, because the water, it's lost water, so it becomes more concentrated. Okay? And the other way of doing it is through freezing. And that is to say, is you put the vinegar into a tank, it looks just like every other tank in the building, you put it into this tank that basically is a big freezer, and it sits there for usually more than a day, because it's a big tank, so it takes a long time to chill the vinegar down to the point that the water starts freezing. The vinegar does not freeze, the water is freezing, it's turning into ice. So what you'll end up with is this big chunk of ice in the middle of the tank, and the liquid that's not ice, the liquid that's not, is now more concentrated than because it lost some of that water. The water froze, the vinegar did not freeze, and then what you do is you drain it out. The liquid that you drained out, liquid you drained out is now at a higher percentage, and you now have your concentrated vinegar. Okay, so in both of these cases, whichever way you did it, whether you did it through reverse osmosis, or you did it through freezing, either way you did it, is what you want is the concentrated vinegar. That's what you're trying to do, create concentrated vinegar. But the lemaisa is, there's water that's left over, either as ice or on the other side of the filter, went through the filter. Okay, so that water is not pure water. That water has in it traces of vinegar in it, of course, because the filtering and the freezing are not perfect. They don't make perfect water and perfect vinegar. Of course not. There's a certain amount of carryover that the water has in it, a certain amount of traces of the vinegar that it came from. Okay, so that water is not just plain old water. That water is water with drops of vinegar in it, and it's a perfect thing to use when you want to dilute the alcohol or the vinegar in the factory. Remember, if you're making white distilled vinegar, you need to distill your original alcohol with water before you could start changing it into vinegar. Well, this is water that not only is it free water, it's water that you don't have to pay for to get it, you have this water ready. Not only that, but this water has in it a certain amount of vinegar already, and all whatever you have in there, the flavor or the acetic acid that's in there, will go into your new product, which is good for you. What you get, basically, so to speak, getting it for free. Or the same later, when you want to dilute your vinegar and turn it into from 12% to 5% to make it for consumer use, so this vinegar comes with extra character, water, and I'm sorry, with flavor and acetic acid to it. So you use that. Okay, so in both, you use lots of water for both of those processes, to dilute the alcohol when you want to start the process, or the vinegar when you want to bottle it. So it's a great way to use it, and that means is the water that's being used for those processes might be coming from the trade part of the plant. You have to pay attention that where are they getting the water from? Is the water coming from the tap? It's really unlikely that they're getting the water from the tap. Take that back. If they're concentrating vinegar, not everybody does that. If they're selling vinegar in concentrated form, then you have to think about it and say, wait a second, if you're selling vinegar in concentrated form, the water's going someplace. And if the water's going someplace, I want to know where it's ending up in. Is it ending up back in kosher to kosher and treif to treif? Or is it not? Is it a big mix? Or you have to keep an eye on it. It's where that water's coming from, because not only could the alcohol be treif on some of the minor ingredients, but the water itself could be not treif, not kosher as well. Now, that's the end of this time. But next time we will, in Mitzvah Shem, speak about another place where water could come from, another place where the water could become treif, and at a different part of the process. We'll talk about some other details like that, and then we'll briefly go through a bunch of the halachic issues that relate, that are particular to vinegar companies.